Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
The last of the Titans.
In the passion and death of their struggle, the very art that had raised them to such Olympian heights was lost. Their techniques vanished.
Referee giving instructions here to both principals, and this should be one whale of a match to wind up things here in Madison Square Garden.
All right, fans of the Titans of Wrestling, if you're digging this show, you got to know that we've been doing them for a while. We've got an archive of shows that you're going to blow your mind. Just head on over to the Place to Be Nation to check them out. Titans of Wrestling Archives. You know you want to hear it.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Titans of Wrestling. And the boys are back. All four of us are here on one show together. So, Johnny, how are you?
I'm quite well, thank you.
Lead analyst Pete, how are you doing?
Doing good, man. Getting ready to have a conference call on Thursday to plan our WrestleMania trip to Orlando.
Oh, wow.
Tickets go on sale the 22nd.
Yeah. That's organized.
Really?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. After all the bitching after last year.
That's the thing, isn't it? Vince has got you guys where he wants, you know.
I loved all the indie shows, man. That's what I like, dude. There was some great wrestling that week. Just wasn't at Mania.
And
unless you're Johnny. Triple H was awesome.
No, I'm just like, it's the indie shows.
I didn't see that sledgehammer spot coming a mile away.
It's the indie shows that are drawing you there. I got you.
Well, I mean, media is cool to go to. Don't get me wrong. It's a great to go to. And, I mean, if they do
I'm
it right, they make
cool
it rules.
For WrestleMania.
And the Java lover, Kelly, how are you doing?
I am great, as always.
You've been holding the fort here on Titans over the past few shows.
Thank you. Yes, I have. We, Johnny and I, did the Muhammad Ali and Antonio Inoki fights. And then myself and my buddy Travis have been doing Stampede Wrestling shows lately. A lot of fun.
And how does that hold up, the Stampede stuff?
The funny thing is that we've done like two episodes and we've only watched that 1961 Stampede show as far as footage goes. Otherwise, we're sort of just talking about guys and, you know, we both grew up in Calgary, so we have like a, you know, personal connection to it. And it's total nostalgia right now.
That was one of the funniest things on the network, wasn't it? Those four Stampede shows came and then they went and everyone was like, oh, no, they're gone.
Yeah. Six of them. But I have them. I got them. And then we're going to be we're going to be looking at those eventually on one of the future episodes.
All right, well, one of the reasons that we're gathered here today is that you also got hold of some other footage, didn't you, Gary?
Yeah.
You want to talk us through what it is?
Yeah, well, firstly, and I've gave compliments to this guy quite a few times lately, Richard Land, Landy 1987 on PWO, has been on fire on YouTube lately with the WWF house shows from the 80s being uploaded. Him and another guy, actually, The Wrestling Collector, it's another YouTube channel. So, I mean, like, the network is great, right? But this is, like, the alternative network now. We're getting just all these shows.
Well, it's the stuff we want to watch.
Yeah, us hardcore nerds that like the old stuff, this is, you know, this is a dream for us. And Land is, not only is he doing this, he also, I put the call out for this show on PWO, because this was the last show, Cal Rabin's last show as a commentator at the Spectrum, and we couldn't find it. Even K-Hawk, Kevin, didn't have it, so that's saying something.
And it wasn't in my collection of wills over here either.
And it's not in the Man of 10,000 Discs collection, so that's another thing. So this was a tough show to come by. But Land came through. We only have the four matches, not the full show. Yes, definitely applause to Richard Land. But four matches are better than no matches. And yeah, so it took a while, but we got it, and here we are.
I mean, we're basically watching the equivalent of, you know, the last Battle of Atlanta here, in terms of how hard this
was. Yeah,
yeah. I'm going to need a new nickname, because now I have a my discs have its own bedroom.
Oh, my God. Are you charging rent?
I've moved out.
It's a wacky sitcom.
Oh, my goodness.
So, okay, and what was the date on this Philly show, Kelly?
October 16th, 82.
October the 16th, 1982. The final show on which Carl Redman is on commentary.
I know, it's sort of like this is our farewell salute to the man. Yeah,
until one show, I believe, he comes back in like 10 years. The very last televised Philly show, is that right?
Yeah, 1989. Wow. And that's another show that Lands uploaded, so I have that now.
God, this guy, where does he get all this stuff?
He's got everything. He's from England, Parv.
Wow.
I don't know. Yeah, he must not have put a bid on your eBay collection.
It's secretly Triple H expanding his plot to make all smarks love him.
Well, I mean, there's two comments on that. It is a fantastic source of kind of SD Jones matches and things like that, which is going to make us happy. And the second thing is that I sold all of my wrestling tapes, which probably cost, I'd say, upwards of £1,000 to put together back in the day. £426.
And shipping costs.
The guy came here and picked them up.
Oh, well, that's
well awesome. Yeah, you got that at least.
Yeah.
I couldn't look him in the eye. when I'm getting fucked, you know, I might as well take it.
No, you should be like that. Kiss me. What? Kiss me. Kiss me like fucked.
I even stopped and said, look, you know, you could probably sell this one. I said, look, this tape here was really hard to get a hold of. You could probably sell that for £26.
Evidently not.
No, the funny thing is that I did get an inquiry saying, hey, dude, see that one tape there? Is that the tape that Owen Hart died on? I was like,
yes, it is. £1,000, please.
And he was like, I don't want the whole, can I just buy that one? I was like, yeah. And I got another one saying, oh, you know, like this one Super Tape 3 or whatever. Can I just have that one? I was like, but, you know, I couldn't be bothered to list every single one individually, you know. I probably would have made more money that way, but there it is.
So you're like that hoarder who's always saying, I could get this much for this.
Huh? You should have just made photocopies of all of the Owen Hart ones and put that on all the tapes and just sold it. Oh, man, this is hard to find.
I don't even know what was on there, to be honest. I mean, God, do they even still work? There we are.
Yeah. This is a pretty useless thing.
Yeah.
But there was a hell of a lot of Sean Mooney there. So,
unless you have your icon to remember him by.
Okay, so any other news before we get into this? Brainbuster was back, Johnny.
Yes, Brainbuster was back, and based on the response, I'm going to change the game again. From now on, all episodes of Brainbuster will feature Chris Zellner and be 3 hours long.
Speaking of 3 hours long, we're going for the 60 minutes here because there are only four matches. So, okay, is there anything else, Pete? You're still doing this week in wrestling?
Yeah, me and Johnny plugging along. I'm kind of a I've been kind of jealous. I've seen Dylan and his family all making all these shows, so I've been rededicating myself to going to live wrestling. I went to ACW 2 weeks ago. Went to an NXT house show a week ago or two. Going to Inspire Pro and on Sunday. I'm going to in September. I'm going to going to Dallas to see Zack Sabre Jr. work a match. Then in the back end, going to this new one in Houston, debuting with Loaded with just big time indie names, got front row seats for that. So yeah, I decided how much I loved going to these small indie live wrestling. The ACW show, I was like running for my life because there was so much brawling in the stands and stuff. Where I had some lady was like yelling at me to move, because she was security. It felt like I had my own personal trainer. Because I was outdoors. It was outdoors, and I was just sweating up a storm. And man, yeah, it was fun stuff.
Who are the top indie names now? Like Will Ospreay, is he one of them?
He's not. That's your neck of the woods.
All right.
Masada was one of the guys I was running for my life from. Will Ospreay is going to be working. Guerrera, one of our up and coming guys. A lot of local indie guys, but Michael Elgin is going to be coming down, and Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Hoyt and Tamatanga, all these guys from New Japan. So they're coming down to Austin for a shot. So I'm excited. And so we'll see.
So Pete's basically like talking a foreign language to Parv right now.
Well, I assumed it would be of interest to some listeners. Mm-hmm.
Davey Boy Smith sounds familiar.
Demograph.
Yeah. He heard Davey Boy Smith and perked up. Oh, oh.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I was like, oh, he's back.
Well, at least I guess you haven't heard, but Vader, I guess, went over Ospreay and at Rev Pro yesterday.
Oh, did he really? Yeah. Okay. I hope he kicked the shit out of him.
Eric's John, whenever it shows up on the Rev Pro streaming channel.
Okay, and Kelly, you got anything else going on?
No, let's get going.
All right. So the first match is for the Intercontinental belt. And two men, really, who should be going for the world title, if you ask me. Superstar Billy Graham, the former champion, and the even more former champion, Pedro Morales. Now, my immediate question here, upon seeing that this was the opening match that we're watching here, is what was the gate for this show? Because I'd imagine that would have still, even in 1982, held some meaning for the Philly fans.
Yeah.
Have we got any idea?
Oh, yeah.
Any ideas on this gate?
Match. In a way, it's a dream match. It's two
former, it's a dream match.
Two former WWE champions.
Yeah, back in 1975 was a dream match.
Right.
In 1980,
it sounded like the crowd was going.
Well, and there's
The crowd was going fucking apeshit here.
The crowd was hot.
But just put in the context, it's not a million miles away from, like, I don't know, Hogan versus Piper in 1996 or Age in a Cage, something like that.
I don't know about fair, but that's not bad. Bad example.
Well, it's usually at this point of these guys' careers back then that two former world champions could even meet in a match. It's usually going to happen when they're old.
So, well, anyway, I was wondering, surely a sellout for this one.
Actually, nowhere close.
Oh, no.
No. Only like 7,500, according to Cawthon's site. Sounded like a pretty decent-sized crowd, but...
Well, you think about it, Buddy Rose really isn't a huge draw for Backlund.
No Andre.
He's a good worker, but he wasn't a draw. Yeah, no Andre.
Yeah. So the
match. The tag belt wasn't defended, so.
Yeah, there were only four matches,
Okay, so Billy Graham's touch was only extended to MSG and not to Philly, Kelly.
Well,
remember, this is during the time when they thought he'd dead.
Yeah. Because remember, in Philly, Gorilla Monsoon in a newspaper wrote a column saying that Billy Graham that Graham died, and he never retracted that story in Philadelphia. So a lot of people thought this guy was a fake.
No one ever said Philly fans were smart. You know?
No, that was the funniest thing, because once it was proven and it was pointed out, Monsoon no-sold it. No.
Fuck you.
I'm Gorilla fucking Monsoon. Yeah. Fuck you, Graham. Yeah.
So, like in Philly, there's like Paul McCartney conspiracy fans where, you know, he's actually been dead since 1968.
Yeah, this was a replacement.
Yeah.
Just like later on, it would be we had 8 Ultimate Warriors and all that kind of shit.
Yeah. And it's easy to believe because, you know, he changed his look completely, shaved his head, mustache, you know, and wrestled in a different style, too.
This was his Japanese period. Like many wrestlers, he was inspired by the great wrestlers of Japan and adopted their style of wrestling.
He still looked all right here compared to the sorry state that we saw him in that one match, Gary.
Yeah. That was April 83, so yeah.
Oh, I mean, something between this point and then, he goes through the saddest decline I've ever seen for a guy.
Sharp decline.
Did anyone else notice that Cal didn't speak for like the first 2-3 minutes here?
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be...
I'm not on the Cal bandwagon.
I thought this was going to be Dick Graham solo for a while.
So maybe he just... You know what? Vince McMahon, being the evil fuck that he is, he fired him while he was walking out to start the show. By the way, this is your last show. We're moving you to the back. And he just sat there pissed off for a couple minutes.
Yeah, I was going to do the same joke, except maybe he was passed a note saying that he was fired.
Oh, there you go. Oh, fuck you, my man.
But it was considering that hard Gaddy tried to get this foot to do, it would have been ironic if Carl wasn't on it.
I know, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, no.
Yeah, totally.
All right, well, Pete, what did you make of this Clash of the Titans?
Yeah, I give it a star and a quarter. Karate Bill, superstar Billy Graham, never ever worked for me. We got Graham stalling to great heat early on, and it worked. Mm-hmm. But he was just walking around. He wasn't even playing to the crowd. So I mean, you could say it was badly worked heat, but he got heat by being a lazy ass. But I'm fine with it because it worked. And then we see Morales takes this shitty bump off of superstar Billy Graham elbow. Morales is overselling these shitty stomps and strikes of Graham's. Morales' comeback is good, but superstar Billy Graham's feeding sucks. So it was just a match that these guys, you know, Morales needs a heel who bump for him to make his comeback seem good and important. That's not Billy Graham at this point in his career. Even when he was champ, Billy Graham, I thought was a pretty good bumper. He was an awkward bumper, but he could get up and feed for him. And now, man, he's just, you know, it's just not superstar Billy Graham. This is a crappy superstar Billy Graham, and just doesn't work for him. It just didn't work. Didn't play to Pedro's strengths, and Graham's offense is so bad that even though Morales is a decent seller underneath, it didn't matter because the offense was so bad. When the most heat was when Graham is stalling, you know you're going to have a pretty shitty match, and that's what we've got.
Joy. Oh. Johnny. All right, Kelly.
Okay.
I'm in shock. I'm in shock.
Oh,
my mic was muted.
There you are.
What's going on?
Sorry. I was in shock in his statements and into silence. Cal called Pedro. He's like, look at that Superman. And apparently this Superman's kryptonite is karate. Because every chop, Pedro was selling it like he was being electrocuted. I was dying. It was bad, but I enjoyed the fuck out of it. So, yeah, except for Dick Worley being just awful, walking around with his dumb swagger. He's like, yeah. But it was funny when they introduced Billy Graham. Dick Worley looked at him with this look, really? I thought you were dead.
I wonder if this was his first match in Philly with the karate gimmick.
I think they mentioned that it's his first time back in Philly.
I think it might have been, yeah.
Since his reign, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's like sumo wrestling, ain't it, Dick? No, not really.
What did you make of it, Cody?
Well, no, it was horrible. There was a lot of booze for Pedro right at the beginning. We'll see that later with another beloved baby face. But yeah, there was heat though. Once the match got going, they were into it. They were into the stalling. But yeah, like Pete laid out, Graham is just horrible here. Horrible. And it's in Backlund's book about how, you know, they had big plans for Graham, and at MSG, they did do three matches with him and Backlund, but Graham was so bad. Like, he couldn't wrestle more than 10, 15 minutes and poorly at that, that they didn't run Graham versus Backlund in any of the other major cities. And yeah, he's just the shits. Like, halfway through my notes, it's like, oh, I couldn't take this anymore. Graham's so bad.
Now, we got to put this in real perspective here, because Kelly is the master of sugarcoating, doesn't really like the Barry guys, and this is a burial for Kelly. So imagine how fucking bad this is, people out there listening.
Okay, I just have to add one thing. At the end, Worley actually takes a bump, and it immediately, I was like, fuck this, it's a five-star match now, and then he no-sells it. I was like, fuck this.
Yeah, no, I am being unusually critical, but Kung Fu Billy Graham is really bad. I mean, I've seen plenty of it from before we started doing Titans, and now we're getting into it here, and it's painful to watch. Yeah. Pedro wasn't very good in this either. His selling was, I don't know. The comeback also, it felt like it just went on forever, and they must have went about 15 minutes. It was just a long, painful match that it is one of the matches that I've disliked the most that we've watched in this run.
Parv, to your point. I'm sorry, Kelly, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. Ahead. I think I'm done.
I was just saying, Parv.
Has Parv made a point?
Yeah. No. Yes, because Parv, the fall of Superstar Billy Graham is a tragedy of Shakespearean proportions. And I think that's why you are fascinated by it as much as you are.
It is quite interesting, isn't it? That he just falls off a cliff. I thought you made a legitimate point to Worley at the start of this match. Pedro was punching and should have been DQ'd instantly for that. So that, I thought that was a fair point. But I was trying to figure out, was karate still banned at this point? Because there was an old NWA rule that karate wasn't allowed.
Well, apparently not, because Cal kept saying, it's got to be banned. We need to ban this all night long, every time there was a karate show.
We didn't have Jesse back here yet to explain it.
I was wondering if karate was still banned in wrestling.
Maybe down south, but...
But the thing is that a judo chop shouldn't really be an eagle because it's open-handed, whereas a Pedro punch should be DQ'd. Mm-hmm. So, but of course, Worley's just biased to the baby faces anyway, so he was never going to DQ him. And then what else happened here? I thought Pedro had his working boots on. He sold his ass off for Graham. It wasn't like... You know, considering what he had to work with, I thought this is the most Pedro's work for about 2 years.
Wow.
That's a great point.
Yeah, but if you sell shit, what does that make you? Shit makes you fucking a pooper scooper.
It means he's trying. He's trying. So he's doing stuff that he's not used to doing. Selling this much.
X-Pac missed the dropkick by 3 feet, but you sold it, man. What a great bump. I mean, it's still a stupid bump. He missed the dropkick.
I mean, don't worry. I still only gave it 1.5-star, Pete.
Well, he was getting hit with karate, Pete. For Christ's sake.
Okay. It's actually judo. They called it judo, didn't they? Graham does judo, I noted. My one Cal Watt.
So wait, they shit on the gimmick? I missed that. He's supposed to be a karate guy. It's actually judo, Dick.
They were calling it a judo chop.
It's your Batman chop from the 60s, that's why.
Do you know, I bought that in glistening Blu-ray recently, the Batman DVD.
I did not get it in Blu-ray, but I got the entire series.
Well, you know, I mean, this is a digression here, but you know, that's been, they thought that would never come out because like four or five different companies needed to agree. It was like Warner Brothers, Fox, and God knows who else, the original production company and all the rest of
it. Well, it was genius because every fucking nerd thought, well, no, they're going to change their minds. And we went and bought
it. Like, immediately went and got it, yeah.
I did.
What are we? Oh, yeah, Cal Watch. He got him in the nose, So I enjoyed that call. And then I got a one note here about why did Graham have to go under the ring to get the chair? I thought, well, ooh, something's happening here. And then all he got was a chair.
No, he also got one of the microphones they put under the ring so the bumps sound really loud. That's right. Because that came out too.
Is that why they put the mic there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's why you could be sitting in the cheap seats at the Spectrum, and when there's a body slam, you hear BAM!
That's very clever. I didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Great. So, anyway, he went under the ring, and thereby actually reminded me of Demolition Crush, of all people. Because they used to do that gimmick, didn't they, Demolition? Sneaking under the ring. Did you remember that?
Killer Bees. That was their finish.
Killer Bees went under the ring. Any other under the ring? That could be the question for the week. Who else went under the ring during there as a gimmick regularly?
Doink the Clown?
Triple H.
Hornswoggle.
Triple H get the sledgehammer from under there?
The Bella Twins.
Al Snow.
Bella Twins.
The Dudley Boys.
Maybe the real Billy Graham was under the ring. Like psychedelic. Billy
Graham. He was waiting to make his. Yeah, that's where they hit him. No one will look here.
Okay. Let's move on.
After Gorilla Monsoon had him wagged.
Okay. God, I'm really nice. For some reason, I'm thinking of. The moment when Pineapple Crush was facing Doink, and that was the first. Wasn't that the first time where the second Doink came from under the ring? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say for the first, but I know that was a gimmick.
I think that was the first ever time they did it. Because was that WrestleMania? Oh, it was WrestleMania 9. Maybe.
Yes,
it was probably on one of your VHS tapes.
Oh yeah.
You'll never be able to see it again.
You know, now I've got nostalgic, and they're all gone.
You're gonna pay that guy more money, and he's paid for you to get him back.
If you only had those and a VCR, you'd be business.
Pete's heel turn.
You know, when I was a kid, I had worked out that Demolition Crush was the Pineapple Crush, but did you know that Repo Man was Smash? Because I didn't. Yes.
I didn't either. I mean, for years,
really?
I was like, no way.
PWI spilled the beans on that one.
Dude, I do it like when the first time I saw him, I was like, oh, okay, that's Crush of Khrushchev.
Yeah, you were about 23. You were about 23 years old.
I mean, that's exactly.
He looked like Smash to become a Repo Man. It looked like totally two different guys. I mean, it looked like he lost like 50 pounds or crying out loud, Johnny.
Oh, dude, fuck that. Dude, he appeared during this short, brief period I started watching again when Flair came to the WWF. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they see Repo Man, and I'm like, it's a fucking Crush of Khrushchev. This is terrible. It was one of the things that pushed me away again.
I thought that it was a masterpiece of acting from Barry Darso because he made himself he made himself look so small and sly.
All the weight back, he was back to being a big dude.
Well, you'd never have guessed it was Smash.
I've never guessed it was Smash.
let's move
greatest
on.
Greatest gimmick of all time. Repo Man.
You know,
he was a gay acting teacher.
He was method, buddy. You better stop laughing.
He was actually instrumental in DiBiase getting the $1 million belt back.
That's great. Yeah. That was how he was introduced.
Because they got repossessed.
I got over the gimmick.
It's true. It got repossessed.
It's the stupidest
thing. It was horrible. It's so dumb. But yeah.
He should have been in Money Inc. too.
He's a muscle.
Okay, well, IRS comes in, pay your taxes. They can't pay. The property thing gets repossessed. Yeah. And then the $1 million man buys it for cheap.
They sell it at auction. He was the Hamburglar. That's who he was. I mean, he was the ripoff of Mickey McDonald's character.
How dare you besmirch the name of the Hamburglar? Hamburglar was scary when I was a kid. Then they made him pretty.
Oh, man. Okay. God, that was a random diversion. Okay, let's move on to Bob Backlund now, taking on A-Boy Buddy Rose. And I'm pretty sure he's still got Sherry with him. One of those two girls was Sherry, wasn't it?
No.
No.
Neither.
No? No. To be fair, this was grainy footage, I'll just say.
Yes.
We'll give you a pass.
Yeah. Who were they then?
We'll give you a mulligan, Parv.
They were just two random women?
Well, they were probably, women's wrestlers. I'm not sure. They looked like porn stars from the early 80s, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't Sherry.
No.
I didn't really have many notes on this match, but I'll let you go, Pete.
Well, I love the match. I give it 4.25 stars. We start off with Bob being booed, and I think that's an interesting talking point here, because they end up work the match so well, Bob is getting cheered like 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later. I thought this was awesome. I thought Rose was awesome early feeding Bob, and Rose is just a stud. He just knows how to knows when to do things, how to do it. Just a master. And I thought we got this really cool looking full Nelson. Bob escapes, and then Rose takes the. It ends up. It really is the Buddy Rose bump, but I always called it the Jerry Estrada death bump because it looks like you should die every time he takes it, where he just drapes his his foot on that bottom rope, and then slowly, then all of a sudden, boom, hits it to the floor. It just looks like she rippled every time. Mm-hmm. I love Rose is really working an aggressive, almost like a Rudo Luchador-esque style here, in the sense where he's just really using roughhouse tactics and getting a ton of heat. I liked how now Buddy has totally turned the crowd on him, and now Bob is totally getting cheered. When Buddy, as opposed to Superstar earlier, Buddy now takes the powder and starts stalling. He's working the crowd, you know, putting his hands over his head, yelling at the lady in the front row. I mean, he's just still working hard. And then Bob, I thought, did a great job working underneath. I thought Buddy really took most of the match and was on top most of the way. Mm-hmm. And Bob does a great job of working underneath and has the crowd with him on his comeback, and it was big time. And then I thought part of the story I really liked was like how Buddy was focusing on the neck, going back to the neck throughout the match. I really liked, and we got this really turdy finish. But overall, man, I thought these guys went in with a crowd that was against your lead babyface. They worked so good and so efficiently and effectively. They totally turned the crowd and got them where they wanted. They worked the crowd to where they wanted to take them, and that's awesome work in my book.
Yeah.
Johnny?
Oh, I totally agree. And there's like, I had some other levels for me that I dug it. Yeah, those boos at first. I was like, oh, now these are those things that we were perpetuated. You know, it was like Bob Backlund always got booed in Philly. You know, it was right around this time where you mm-hmm. really start hearing it. Mm-hmm. But you definitely hear it. In regards to the two ladies, Cal has the observation. He says something like, you see these two chicks, it's how I train. Cal has to repeat it. It's like, that's how he trains with those two. That's how he keeps in shape. It's creepy.
He does not work out on weights.
He doesn't work out on weights, if you know what I mean, Dick. Hey. And then he kind of implies that Bob's taking a look, and he's like, no, Bob's got a nice wife and kids at home. He doesn't need this Las Vegas nonsense. It's like, oh, okay, you're covering yourself. You love it. I love every time they start out with some like amateur stuff and made it clear that Bob is better at that. Mm-hmm. And they did that throughout the match where it took running out of the ring and, you know, and healing away and acting scared and all that shit for Buddy Rose to get an advantage, get in there, do a little something. Bob realizes what's happening. It starts getting him, and Buddy takes a powder again. And they just built, like Pete said, you know, exactly the way that anyone booing changed their mind. You got that dead on right. I thought this was a lot of fun.
Kelly?
Mm-hmm. I agree. Very good match. Well, this is Cal's last night in the booth, so it's fitting. Another one of our favorites from Philly is in the house. Super 8 is clearly at ringside.
Oh, I didn't see him there, was he there?
No, he's there. And he may even have his mustache back.
Oh my God!
Yes.
Did you get different footage than us?
No. But this match was the one where I noted that I could see him. You know, because he was always in that spot where the ring post obstructs him, so you can't really see him very clearly. But no, he was there. I mean, because he's such a big man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you get to see the sides of him anyway.
He's the world's worst. Where's Waldo?
Kelly would know those love handles anywhere.
Yes. And who knows how much longer we have Super 8 in the house, because he vanishes at some point, I think, in 1983.
You're both fired.
Yeah. I'm cleaning things up. No more Cal, no more fucking Super 8.
I'm done with this shit.
Well, maybe he was
Cal's assistant, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe either A, he was one of Backlund's biggest boo boys, and he was like, I can't take this shit anymore, and gave up because he hated Backlund. Or he was the biggest Backlund fan and gave up after Iron Sheik pinned him.
Yeah. Or he
didn't get out of bed anymore.
And he died.
They had to remove the wall to remove him from his bed. Yeah. Like in one of those shows.
I think death by massive heart attack is maybe the most likely option.
You know, or maybe he was like Vince McMahon Sr.'s buddy that Vince just fucking hated. He's like, oh, I'm in charge now. You're fucking gone, fatty.
Yeah, he was the first dog. First documented Big Mac attack on record and stuff.
I might have to get that footage back up to see if I can spot him.
He's definitely there.
I'm probably gonna have to watch this match again, to be honest, because kind of passed me by. It didn't grab me like it. I didn't give anyone close to 4 stars. it didn't grab me at all.
Yeah, well, I like the whole thing, because after the match is over, like they build towards the count out finish. And then, which sets up the rematch, which is going to be a lumberjack match at the next show. So that's logical. But I just love the post-match, how Buddy kept coming back and taunting Bob, getting back in the ring, bailing. That was just great. Like, extra bit of healing to make the fans hate you more and want to see you get your ass kicked in a rematch. And Buddy, what a great heel. Yeah, this, I mean, coming after the Morales-Graham match, this was unbelievable. Like, within minutes, this match was, like, so much faster. And yeah, than the previous match. It was just on another planet, basically. And this was one that, well, yeah, this footage, you know, it's been hard to come by. So I don't know if anyone's ever talked about this one before. So I was really looking forward to this. Because, you know, it's Bob, it's Buddy, it should be good, and it was pretty good, and
It wasn't on the last DVR set, and it wasn't on the infamous Buddy Rose set either, so. Mm.
Yeah, it's totally obscure. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to watch this again, because somebody called me during the middle of it, and it kind of, I don't know, I struggled to get into it, and, you know, how many years have we been doing this show now? I'm kind of like, we've seen a lot of Bob Backlund. So I probably need to go back and look over this, and I'll look out for Super 8.
You might enjoy it because it's a lot of Bob Backlund being outsmarted, and I'm sure you'll get
it. I did know here that he gave Rose more of the match than we used to. So that was something.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And we also had the Cal call. I'm sorry, I just noticed this. When he's trying to steal the belt at the end, and Cal like leaves the table and yells at him clearly, you don't get the belt. Gets back on the microphone and Dickie goes, I told him he don't get the belt.
I saw that. Yeah, that was quite funny. As if Buddy Rose doesn't know that as well.
Well, he knows now.
He knows now.
He knows now for Mr. Cal Rudman.
That's so damn straight.
Can I only win the belt on a count, on a pin or a submission, Buddy Rose?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with a monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with good old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Okay, let's move on now to the match that everybody's been waiting for. It's Chief J Strongbow against Mr. Torture himself, Mr. Saito.
I'm sorry, Parv.
One half of genius torture.
Yeah, well, they're fighting in singles competition tonight. So, is Mr. Saito a good enough worker, Pete, that you can guess a good match out of this sack of shit?
It started fine. I thought that they're playing off their nationality shtick early. I like that. I thought that was pretty funny, where you have the bow and the Indian thing going on. And that was interesting. It starts to go fine, and then Saito work in the back, and then all of a sudden we get the DQ, I think it is, right?
No.
It was short. Huh?
No, there's a pin.
Was there a pin? Okay, but it was quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, I just I don't think they got enough time. I was enjoying what I was watching. It just ended really quick.
You know, I got some notes about the finish here, but Johnny, in fact, I want you to explain the finish to me. Okay. give me your thoughts on the match.
You're probably gonna have to tell it to me again based on these notes. Jesus. It's good to see that McLean Stevenson got work after Hello Larry got canceled as a referee. Oh, that's the obscure joke no one's going to get, but I'm obligated to tell one.
You're alienating that demographic.
I've heard that one before.
Not even in this demographic because I've never heard of this show.
You've never heard of Hello Larry?
Nope.
We talked about it on the Titans Wrestling from a couple shows ago.
Holy shit.
Remember? He was the host of the Tonight Show. For the Freddie Blassie show. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't on.
No, you weren't. Neither were you, Parv.
Hello, Larry.
Where were you guys?
Yeah. Yeah, they don't even listen, dude.
No.
Well, I've got about 380 hours of Selna to catch up on, so.
So apparently it's December 7th all over again. As they say, it's a clash of two cultures. Like, really? It's with the Italian guy pretending to be an Indian culture?
You've got to give it to Saito. He is actually Japanese, which is
rare.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's real.
Yeah, but on the other side, like, the you know, yeah. And because he's looking, the older he gets, the more it's obvious he's not a Native American. He's an old Italian. I love Saito in this doing the whole "I'm gonna bow to you" and Strong would be like "fuck you" in your bow. You know, we got beef. Let's get it on. And that's like the best part of anything Strongo does in this is he's terrible. But again, it turned to karate, as Cal pointed out. It's turned into karate.
Indian karate.
Indian, yes, Indian karate. Everything was karate tonight for Cal Redmond. And I don't even remember the fucking finish.
Well, let me for the benefit of the many listeners here who are never going to get hold of this footage, let's face it. I mean, they could try to get in touch with Kelly and download the 36 gigabyte video.
3.8.
I don't know, you gave it to us in like Betamax format.
I was quitting, considering the time frame. I thought I'd go fully retro.
My software is having like, what the hell file is this? It took forever to open.
I know.
Hold on. No, man, we talked about old school wrestling. Kelly's keeping it old school with that file.
It was
or program,
all
I meant to say.
You need a Commodore 64 to open it.
I was going on about that converter program. Couldn't do it, Kelly. So I don't know what the hell that format that was I use in it.
I don't know either, man.
But VLC can play it. That VLC player's magic. It can play absolutely anything.
Yeah.
Although it couldn't keep track of the time for some reason. Okay, well, let me just describe the finish here. So basically, Saito goes for a classic kind of, a heel pin with the foot on the ropes, Ric Flair style.
Mm-hmm.
And the ref spots him.
Oh, right.
And Saito thinks he's won. And then in the confusion, Strongbow goes for the cover and puts his foot on the ropes.
Yeah.
And he gets a pin with his feet on the ropes.
Yes.
And then he goes over to Cal Redmond, and Cal points out to him, look, I want to show you what you've done.
Yeah.
My question to Johnny is, what sort of an example is Strongbow to the kids?
Well, apparently, according to Cal Rubin, a very poor one.
He's a cheat. I mean, how does anybody explain that?
Dude, Cal Rubin was Cal Rubin, young investigative reporter. You know, I ain't having it, Strongbow. Look at this. Look what you did here. He was calling him out. He cheated. You're a good guy. You're not supposed to cheat. And Cal Rubin, being the stand-up gentleman that he is, he told him, called him on his bullshit. Loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. It was a good. It was the taste of your own medicine here.
It was. He's like, fuck it. I'm already being fired. No, that's how he got fired, actually. He was on the bubble and he did that to Strongbow, who had a lot of stroke. And Strongbow went back and said he's gone.
Why did they book it? So the Strongbow cheated?
I have no idea.
We've seen
to be believable.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a neat finish that the baby finally
do that type of stuff all the time. I mean, like the Rock and Roll Express would like tag behind the ref's back and fake it. It was just something out of the crowd. I mean,
yeah.
Oh yeah, but this is like, I mean, it's the only way that Chief J. Strongbow should be able to beat this giant muscle-bound guy who's awesome is by cheating. So I guess it makes sense. But,
Kelly?
Any additional
thoughts on
this? I mean, it was a quick match. You know, Strongbow came out fired up with knee lifts, and Saito sold pretty well, flew out of the ring for him. I like this finish. I can't recall seeing a similar finish, really, where the heel tried to get the pin with his feet on the ropes, and then the babyface gets the pin with his feet on the ropes. I thought that was a really cool, clever finish.
One thing I will say that did bug me for many years is that in WWF especially, heels could only win cheap. Like, they would always have a handful of tights or foot on the ropes or... Like, it doesn't matter who the heel, it could be the top heel. They could only ever get pins cheap. Cheap as the cheap in WWF. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe we're starting to see some hallmarks of Vince booking here, or as opposed to Vince Sr. booking.
Oh, I don't know. Well, maybe. I mean, because Hogan had a few heelish wins during his run, and I don't know.
So, all right. Well, I gave that one star. Did you give it a rating, Pete?
Nah, for 5 minutes. I enjoyed what I was seeing up until and it went. I mean, I don't know why you hated it, the match.
All right. Well, what I really wanted is for Sato to come in, suplex, scoop, power slam, pin. But that was never going
to
happen.
Oh yeah, you wanted Saito squash.
you wanted to see Saito murder him. And like go, you know what, I'm sick of your bullshit, I'm going to go back to Japan, I'm going to shoot on your ass. That's what Parv wanted to see.
The Ernie Ladd angle, that's what Parv wanted. Feathers down his throat.
You know, Mr. Saito to suddenly do Abdullah's gimmick and start putting a fork in his head.
God, I mean, it's 1982 and he still has to go over, you know? It's like, great.
Well, they were the tag champs, though, weren't they? Saito and Fuji.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of lost who was the tag champs.
Oh, no, the Strongbows. No, sorry, they... Well, it's around this time they switched the titles, I think.
It was weird because what's his name? Jobber, Frank Hill. What was his name? Jules.
No. Fuji and Saito were the tag champs for this show. They clearly...
Jules wasn't on the card, was he?
Jules, yeah. Yeah. That's why
they only drew 75,000. No Jules.
75,000.
God. All right, so let's move on.
Did I say 75,000? Yeah, 75,000.
They went to the vet and held a
Yeah, that stink.
Let's move on to Mr. Fuji now, taking on Pat Patterson, two of my absolute favorites here. So, Pete, what did you make of this one?
What a shitty match. I don't want to see Pat Patterson involved in... He's one of my favorites. I want to see Pat Patterson work a match, not stalling the shtick. While this match has its place on a card, it's not with Pat Patterson. Now, if I paid to see Pat Patterson do this match, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, okay, I just got ripped off of my money. I came to see Pat Patterson attempt to steal the show. That's not the style of match. I will say, bud.
Oh, my God.
Really? I mean,
This may be the biggest gap between a rating that me and Pete have ever given. I'll just put that out there.
Wow.
I'm picturing Pete at like looking at a poster for this show, like in a window, and seeing all the way at the bottom, Pat Patterson versus Mr. Peter Jacob. I'm fucking going, and I better steal the goddamn show, or else I'll get my fucking money back.
I'd be angry because I wouldn't want to see him wrestle Fuji. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, come on now.
I'm not going.
It's not working, Pat Patterson. One of the great made Parv's top 100 wrestlers list.
Fuji made my top 100.
Yeah, your list is nice.
My list doesn't count.
I mean, if Parv was still involved, Parv would have asked for that one to be thrown out too.
I think he did.
No, I've got a newfound love. I mean, if the Mystery Titans Theater taught me anything, it was that Mr. Fuji is actually way better than we think he is. So
yeah, that's what put him over the top for me.
Not on the card, maybe not in the top 100 list, but go on.
Okay, Johnny, any thoughts on this match?
Well, Pat's a ball of fire to start off this match. And I've noticed all throughout these matches that Dick Graham is taken to adding man at the end of a lot of sentences. Mm-hmm. He's trying to be hip and young so he doesn't get sent to the back with Cal, because all throughout this he's like, that sure is something, man. You heard it, man. That's what I do. Fuji teases the salt going in and out of his pants for quite a while, but I was loving it because the crowd was going crazy for it. He was a puppet master with that shtick.
Yeah.
And Cal, this is like, now this is a Dick Worley. This is some young referee who Cal does not care for.
Cal hates this ref.
Cal does not care for this young man whatsoever. Of course, you know, the salt goes in Pat's face eventually, or he rubs it in his face.
Raked his eyes with salt.
Yeah, he raked his eyes with the salt, which I thought was a neat little touch. Yeah. It's not the first time that Pat's been blinded by something salty in his eyes. Boom! Mic drop.
hey, was that ref Joey Morella?
I don't think so.
I was just wondering, I'm just trying to conspiracy theory on why Cal got demoted here. Because I'm trying to think of, like, is there anything he did on this show to get?
No.
And that could be one of them, because he ragged on Morella Jr. here.
Oh, no. That he really was on the bubble? Vince Jr. came up to him and go, okay, Cal. He's like, you better impress me tonight. I'm going to tell that him to go fuck himself on the air.
Okay, that was the other thing. What was this Cal's line right out of a B-movie from 1945? Did you pick up on that, Johnny? Maybe Fuji said something in Patterson's ear, and then he started going on about this John Wayne film from 1945.
I
thought it might be one of your favorites or something.
I was waiting for a title that I recognized, and I'm not sure I did.
It was a war movie, I think.
It was definitely not. No, he said the Iwo Jima, didn't he?
I thought so, yeah.
Okay, so he was trying to say the Sands of Iwo Jima, but that's it. He couldn't remember the title because Sands of Iwo Jima is a very famous John Wayne movie, but he only got out like a couple of words in Iwo Jima to, like, I think he's talking that. I'm not quite sure. But
he was going to go around the houses. He talked about it for a good minute or so. It was a bit unusual moment from Carl.
His swan song is, I'm going to talk about this John Wayne movie.
Kelly, what did you make of this?
Yeah, I liked it. It was nothing special, but there was neat stuff in it. I liked Fuji's surprise chop before the bell to stun Pat to get the early advantage. We've gone over the salt and all the teasing and all that.
So a Japanese who Pearl Harbored Patterson surprised you?
That's, well, no, it was a surprise chop.
That's
Japanese Psychology 101.
Because they were doing, yeah. That was a cool true Pearl Harbor. That one was surprising.
As if it's like hardwired into the psyche, the sneak attack.
It is, honestly. You know, ever since I think Pearl Harbor, that's like a trope.
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, the Japanese thing
is,
deal.
The thing is, Roosevelt knew he was going to do it, and they kept it a secret.
I liked the sweet reverse kick that Fuji gave Pat at one point, and Pat took a good bump to the outside. That was nice. The post-match where Fuji delivered a nasty headbutt to Pat's balls was also hilarious, I thought. And that was one of Cal's last lines was, right in the groin with his head. And he's gone. He's gone forever.
We will never know why, because me and Johnny actually asked Cal directly, and he basically no-sold us, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah, completely. And it was like, and we were so busy being starstruck, we were just like, okay. Or we've been criticized that because we weren't pressing investigative reporters when we're talking to one of our idols.
Should have pressed him hard, Johnny. That 86-year-old man weaseled out of that question.
Yeah, fuck him, huh? Jesus Christ.
Well, I actually thought that Pete was unusually down on this match. I thought it was great. I gave it 3¾ stars. I always...
I was figuring out this, like, look at Fuji using that Jerry Lawler psychology. And
I've written here, this match is a masterpiece of psychology. It was phenomenal. I mean, did you notice Patterson's taking of the post? I thought that was phenomenal. The posting on the outside. I have never seen such a great posting as that. Tuck it right in the face.
What did Stephen Graham do? That's what I want to know, to turn you into this person.
No, I know what it is. He recently hung out with Will and producer Matt Denton, and the positive vibes of those cool dudes have changed part. He was done with wrestling, but could something re-spark, you know, my love? And it was this match, and I agree with you, sir. This was a well-worked match.
Well, I've got some other notes here. Fuji does the karate stuff better than Graham, which is a note. The headbutt he did was outstanding.
That's high praise.
the headbutt was outstanding, I thought. I thought this was a really well-worked match. The crowd were into it.
3¾ star match. Wow. Okay.
It was fantastic. I would recommend trying to seek this out. I mean, good luck. But, it's out there.
Pete's about to throw down his headphones and say, I say good day, sir.
I came back in Titans for this.
Did you notice how fast that count was, by the way? That count was ridiculous on the pin.
Not unusual.
They have to sort those counts out. They're out of control at this point. I mean,
Cal Rubin, right? This young fucking referee doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's just pointing out everything. He's like, fuck it, I'm speaking truth on my last show. This kid sucks, and there's proof.
I feel that my ratings for this show may have been affected by exterior things here, because I seem to be out of step with the money here, which is, I mean, Pete's usually on the money, this is going to be my man.
I actually am on the money.
Well, hold on, is that Pete's new nickname? Money Schumacher? Because I'll go with it.
Money Schumacher.
Yeah.
Right, I shake the money maker late at night.
Oh, good Lord.
You sound like a kind of, kind of Jewish dealer from the Middle Ages or something, like a Shylock figure. Money Schumacher.
There's the gimmick. That's even better than Repo Man.
The difference is you have to take a pound of his flesh, baby.
Wasn't that basically the gimmick of Macho Man's father? Angelo Poffo,
the miser.
The miser, yeah. It was pretty much like Boris Malenko was kind of along those lines as well.
You know what? Actually, that was...
was
no,
he?
no. No. Because the Miser, actually, that was Donald Trump's favorite wrestler when he was a kid. It's inspired his love of wrestling. That's why he's been involved with it so often. He loved that character.
Did he? Did he make that up, Tony, or is he? It's a joke.
Well, like, it was a failed joke, apparently. Thanks.
Why did not? I mean, anything is possible, Donald Trump. You know?
What? He was like, you know, it could be.
I'm surprised his favorite wrestler wasn't someone like Buddy. You know,
like,
one of the.
Like the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
But it was, wasn't it? Yes. A WrestleMania 4. WrestleMania 5. Jesse says, do you hear that loud cheer coming from there? Those are all Donald Trump's mates. And
yeah, because they all wish they could own a black man, too.
That was in the kayfabe that his favorite wrestler was DiBiase. Because they had the two WrestleManias at Trump Plaza, didn't they?
Yeah, and they shook hands and everything.
And DiBiase was meant to be the favorite wrestler of him because he was the top heel at the time. I was going to say his favorite is going to be someone like Waldo Von Erich, you know,
Now, maybe.
Maybe the big boss man, given how much he talks about law and order, you know. Mm.
How about Paul Jones for lasting effectiveness as a manager? Because it's fading away.
There was another guy with a kind of Jewish shtick. It was the, the other manager of the Sheik in Detroit.
Right,
like Eddie
Kreachman.
Eddie Kreachman.
Yeah. He was definitely had the Star of David.
Right. Had the Star of David, and
To be fair, he borrowed the coat from a production of Diary of Anne Frank that was going on in the same arena, and it got over. So that's why he kept it.
They never really done like a kind of speaking of like Jewish style gimmicks. They never done like a Woody Allen type wrestler, have they? I think that'd be a pretty effective manager type role, you know. I guess like.
Well, Jerry Lawley, you cheated. And really, I felt very neurotic about it, and I had to talk to my counselor.
Yeah, like
let me bring him out here. It's Kane.
Bix could play the role, I think.
That impersonation sounded more like guy from Caddyshack 2, Jackie Mason. There we go.
Oh, that was a new. If so, it would be a terrible Jackie Mason. Jackie Mason talks like this.
That guy,
Jackie Mason says, hey, Sherbucker, you're one of my relatives. You know, that's Jackie Mason.
Harvey Whippleman. Like a kind of manager of that kind of build, you know? He could, but not, obviously not Harvey Whippleman, but another one. Anyway. Let's do the he's meant to be a good manager in other territory, doesn't he? Whippleman.
He was okay as Downtown Bruno, but I would
Downtown
not.
Bruno, that was it,
But Downtown Bruno was fun as a group of people managing as a solo. It's when he had that whole group of people around him and he was like the dirty mascot.
Okay, so let's do our awards. And, the match of the night, I reckon you three are all going to go for the same match.
I'm going Backlund Rose for sure, yes.
Johnny?
I liked the others for what they were, but I'm going Backlund Rose because I just love the... What Buddy Rose was doing was just all pure shtick, and it was like artwork. So that's why I love it.
Kelly?
Yeah, I got to go with that one. It was the only match that really, resonated with me.
I'm going with Fuji Patterson as the true shtick masterpiece.
Of course.
I'll agree with him. I thought that a lot of what Buddy Rose is doing, was like pure shtick, but he just made it seem not shticky, if you know what I mean. So
maybe I've just got in my old age. I've got such an affection for Fuji. And But honestly, watch that match again and just look at the moment that Patterson takes that posting. It's one of the best single takes of a post I've ever seen. MVP. Possibly a more interesting question.
Buddy Rose.
You all going for Rose?
I'm going for Cal. Gotta do it. for the final one. It's got to be Cal, bro.
Kelly.
I'm going with Rose, yeah.
And I'm controversial, possibly for the first time ever.
Ooh, aren't you?
I'm going with Pedro Morales.
What?
Well, I love you.
What page are you watching, sir?
He got a 1.5-star match out of Billy Graham.
Oh, God.
I mean, if you listen to the crowd and how much he was selling and how much they got into it, considering they were booing him at the start of the match, I thought, his work in that match...
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go on record right now. Parv is going to rewatch this Backlund Rose match and then want to throw this episode out and go, God, I can't believe I made these statements. I don't know what's going on here.
You know, Parv, your compelling argument has convinced me to change my vote. I'm going with you.
You want to go for Pedro as well?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wow.
Seriously, when have we ever seen him work that hard in the past God knows how long?
Plenty of times.
Yeah, he's had better performances for sure. Against Slaughter.
That garbage, yeah.
Patera. Yes. He was, I don't know, he was moving pretty slow, Parv, in that match.
But the selling's not all about bumping. It's also about, other things.
Right. Yeah. It's called selling appropriately. Me, I would have known sold all of Billy Graham's weak ass.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
Come on, if that was Steamboat, you'd be giving him credit here, Yeah. All right.
Pete storms in the ring. Not on my fucking watch, motherfucker.
Right, worst
try that shit with me.
Worst performer on the night. The Billy Graham Award has to go to Billy Graham, doesn't it?
Yeah, Billy Graham.
Anyone disagree that Billy Graham was...
I'm going to go with Strongbow.
He was pretty awful, too.
I'm going to go with Strongbow because as awful as Billy Graham was, he's got this terrible gimmick, and he's doing his best to get over that he can do fucking karate. And it's sad to watch, but at least he's trying. And Strombo just stinks.
Is he really trying though? Like, did he watch like?
I think he's trying the most. He's trying the most he can, realizing he made a very bad choice. And but,
like, did you think he did any research? Like, watched a single Bruce Lee film or
maybe one or two?
There's no real evidence of. In fact, it was a pretty karate heavy show because there were three guys who had karate martial arts kind of.
That's why Cal wants it banned. It's invading the WWF.
The scourge of the WWF.
Kenny, you got any other worst performances?
No. That, like I said, that match between Graham and Morales is one of my least favorite matches from the run of Titans of Wrestling. It's garbage shit. And Graham was the reason why. And I love Billy Graham. I'm a big Billy Graham fan. But that
and to be serious, it's one of those things like, you know what? Maybe not watch every dream match that you ever wanted to see, because more often than not, they end up being disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe of that young ref. He was pretty bad. He gave the Strongbow call and he gave that very fast count. But I think it's going to have to be Billy Graham.
Obviously.
Which may make it the first match in history that I've given MVP and worst performer to. On a card ever. So
that's interesting.
That is quite historic.
Which says something, honestly, that you're probably off your gourd on this.
So where are we going to next, Kenny? I told you this was going to be a short show.
Yeah. I thought before I got into the next card, I'd like to mention in about 4 days or so, it'll be the third anniversary of our first show, guys. So happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Of our first show or the one I did with old Crazy James there?
Our first show. So number two. Okay. Titans number two.
So he just said that. He just said that with conviction.
Didn't we recon that and made it Titan Zero?
But
episode one still exists. I'm just talking on the fly here. I mean, we could redo episode one to celebrate our anniversary.
Yeah,
go back to 79 and watch the hour long fucking. Maybe I could change my mind on Valentine Backlund.
Yeah, maybe for the fourth anniversary.
That'd be just typical Vince McMahon revisionist history. They push this kind of shit at us on the network, telling us all this shit. I know that ain't fucking true, so don't you dare on my watch.
Yeah.
So it must mean the actual 3-year anniversary of the show Titans of Wrestling must have passed already.
Of the first one, I believe so. Yeah.
All the important ones now have their.
Yes. Yes. 3 years goes by quickly, huh?
I would have brought a cake, but someone would have ended up in it. It is a wrestling show.
Anyway, more greatness to come, of course, in the coming months and years. Obviously, at this rate, it's going to take us another 3 years to finish 1982 and 1983.
So. See, we're doing everything the opposite. We're doing a short show, and we're only going to start putting them out every now and then.
Yes.
Because we're the
rebels of
the rebels. Podcasting, yeah. Man.
I just remember like last year, Parr was like, hey, what are we going to do once we break Backlund's loses the title? We have so much longer.
Apparently the answer was slow down.
We're never going to get out of the Backlund era. It's going to be like Groundhog Day. This is like, yeah.
Well, anyway,
Parv, come on. Parv. You just don't want to let us go.
Don't want it to end.
Come on, bring it in here. Bring it in. You know you want it.
And now it's Sal Palomo taking on who would it be? Mr. Fuji? Pete, what do you reckon? It's like the 80 millionth show. It's the same. It's Chief J Strongbow taking on.
Yeah, I know, right? Another Stallworth. Jesse Jones versus.
But nobody can say that we haven't been thorough.
But these are going to end up being like the best shows.
No, we got lots of great stuff to come.
We've got Strongbow's versus Samoans coming.
Yeah, we have that. This next show is going to be pretty interesting. We're going to do, I guess, a whole disc like we used to do. And it's got both Madison Square Garden matches from November and also Philadelphia Spectrum matches from November. The debut of Gorilla Monsoon in the booth for both MSG and the Spectrum.
Actually. Oh, he takes over MSG as well?
Yes. Yeah. At first, it's him and Vince for a few months, and then it becomes entirely Gorilla's booth.
So this is when he pulled his power play then, right?
Maybe?
No. Yeah, he sold his share.
Right. Vince. Well, 1982 is when Vince Jr. bought the company from his father, yes.
Right, but didn't Monsoon quickly sell his share in order for certain promises? And that was a lot of it, and that's why suddenly he's all over everything?
Well, Vince Sr. said that, Gorilla would have a job for life, right?
But he made a deal with Vince Jr. That's why he sold him his shares.
I guess so. It was him, Scotland, and who was the other one?
Shell Zacco.
Zacco? So there you go. They had to sell their share.
I remember long.
I read it in Meltzer's obituary.
We had a long, tedious thread in which we had basically the facts and then some people who won't accept them.
JDW.
That was based. Do you remember that? It was long,
right.
tedious thing. Where
long, tedious.
He wouldn't have it that Gorilla got the payoff that he did, basically.
Right.
I know. But still better than everything else now.
But it was basically, as far as I can remember, he had a job for life, and at every single show he had something like what an enhancement guy would get.
Yeah, he got paid job every day for every house show. Not every house show, but he didn't even have to be at the house show. That's what made it even better. And they're running, think about it, 3 a night.
Right.
Back in
the 80s. Or sometimes 4.
Job a page from every single house show, and he was basically worked as a commentator, but he got his money no matter what.
Yeah.
And I guess Vince being Vince, he wanted to actually put him to work and not have him do nothing. God knows what he had Scotland doing.
Well, that and Gorilla also had a lot of backstage influence, too. He wasn't just some clown he was keeping around because of a deal. You know, Gorilla was, you know, a voice who worked in the creative aspect.
Well, I mean, he basically ran...
That's why Scotland isn't around.
Right.
He basically ran, like, all of the... I remember he worked out. Zacco ran Philly. And all of the other kind of outside of New York territories, Gorilla was the guy who ran them.
Gorilla kind of ran Philly as well, though. Like he was booking the shows, I think, in Philly.
Yeah,
it was like the Five Families, man, and Gorilla made a big power move.
Yeah, but I think Vince Jr. liked Gorilla, and they were on the same page. I think as far as the future was concerned, and how they were going to get over these new wrestlers and stuff. I think that's why,
and
one of the reasons.
Gorilla also an enforcer too, wasn't he?
Yeah,
enforcer, of sorts.
But I think there's a reason he moved into the booth, the commentating booth, is because Vince Jr. wanted him there and wanted.
Yeah. Well, he was old too.
Well, yeah, but I think he wanted someone that was in line with what he.
He must have really impressed him on
the. Thought about.
Well, no, it's actually a little known fact that. Gorilla Monsoon turned Vince on to rock and roll. That's what started the whole thing. He's like, hey, Vince, have you heard about this rock and roll the kids love? Oh, I've never heard of it, Gino. Oh, no, this Cyndi Lauper, she's something else. Yeah, that's why.
There's no, like, Monsoon obviously listened to, like, Sinatra and all that kind of
stuff. No, he was listening to Billy Idol and, you know, all the rest of the hip 80s music.
Just before we go here, I'm really excited for that because I don't think I've ever heard Vince and Gorilla in the booth at the same time. I can't remember.
Like every pay-per-view ever?
Were they in the same... Yeah. Vince and Gorilla?
No,
I'm thinking of Heenan.
It was Vince and Ventura and Heenan and Monsoon.
Yeah. It was a rare pairing.
I know I've heard it.
Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah, I've heard it. But Parv has too, because we looked at Kurt Hennig versus Eddie Gilbert from that Garden show.
And you can't have two alpha males in the booth. Bro.
Who's going to be? It's like those times when it's JR and Tony Schiavone. Who's going to be the color man? Who's going to be the play-by-play?
Right.
I think Vince will take play-by-play and Gorilla will move into color. That's my
I can't imagine Gorilla even liking play-by-play.
All right, guys. Well,
just the whole time he's like, oh, that's a move I'll never pronounce. I should know better.
Shall we sign off then? Until next time. This is Titans of Wrestling.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again. Some sunny day. Smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
I'm sure everybody's looking for Repo Man. I think I've located him. Excuse me, Repo Man. Why the unprovoked attack on the Macho Man, Randy Savage?
Because it was provoked with that greater one when I came behind him and hit him.
Hey, so, wasn't that vicious attacks I've ever seen on a superstar?
You're darn right. That was vicious. He was late on the payments on his hat, and he deserved it. In fact, I've been watching him for a long time, and he never paid any attention to me. But now he is, and he's going to get me in the ring.
Well, you stole his hat, and
he steal no hat. Say, I'm a nice guy. Ain't no thief.
I'll tell you what, the Macho Man Randy Savage is very upset. You should hear the comments he is making.
What do you mean making a comment?
Yes, he can hear you right now.
Let me hear that. Let me hear that.
Hey, you're going to get a Monday Night Raw hangover. Let's do the thing right now. Come on up here, and I'm going to... Hey, where do you want to land, Repo Man?
Hey, when I hit you from behind and you flew, that's just the start of it. Because when I get you again, it's going to be worse. It's going to be like right down here in New York, right down here in Manhattan. It could be a street fight.
Yeah, that's right. Not a chance on you doing the thing to me again. Hey, you got a good kickoff right there. How about a New York street
fight? Hey, just remember... I have your hat.
Hey, I don't care.
And that's your prized possession.
That's okay. Hey,
you were late with the payments, and I got it.
Hey, brother, that doesn't even make it with me.
Come on, tough guy.
You made it. Oh, is that
right? You want to wrestle?
Hey, no, I don't want to wrestle. I want to do something different. We're going to have a date. Don't be late, brother. Just.
Hey. Now, wait a minute, Savage. This is going to be great because I'm going to put the boots to you.
I think he's downstairs.
I can't wait to get you in
the street.
I got your attention.